UK correspondent Matt Dathan is with The Times. I've forgotten your title. Is it National Correspondent or
what? Home Affairs Editor, yeah.
Thank you, Home Affairs Editor. Now, Boris, one word. This was a highly anticipated moment, his appearance to speak for himself on some of the issues of his tenure.
Yeah, that's right. It's a long-awaited committee appearance from Boris Johnson at the Privileges Committee, which is investigating the whether he misled Parliament. Well, we know he misled Parliament. He admits that. It's whether he deliberately or recklessly misled Parliament. And over the multiple breaches of lockdown rules back in 2020, 2021. So this today was Boris Johnson's first sort of public defence of his actions. And his main defence is that he did not knowingly or recklessly mislead Parliament. From what he knew and what he was told by advisers, he did not know that the lockdown rules were being broken within Number 10. So that was what we had today.
How was it received?
He started out with pretty much reading out his statement, which was basically written by his taxpayer-funded lawyer, one of the leading lawyers in the country, and it was sort of a very firm defence. He came out on the attack. It said that while he respected the committee, he thought it was he thought it was being treated unfairly, and there's political bias to it with a Labour chair, Harriet Harman. And he made pretty much a staunch defence that he did not knowingly or recklessly mislead Parliament, provided various quotes and WhatsApp messages to back him up that he had not received messages or advice from his advisers that he had not misled Parliament, that lockdown rules weren't breached. However, the longer the session went on, the more flimsy his answers became, and he was sort of lashing around, trying to claim that the farewell parties were farewell sort of, he didn't call them parties, I guess farewell sessions, which we would call leaving drinks, were necessary and essential during the lockdown rules because it was important that he was saying goodbye to people that had played a very key role in Number 10, and this was taken pretty poorly by all MPs on the committee, including the four Conservative MPs. Bernard Jenkin, a senior Conservative MP on the committee, said the guidance does not say you have a thank you party and as many people in the room as you like. And another instance, Boris Johnson said that that social distancing rules were never meant to be followed perfectly. He said social distancing in Number 10 may have been imperfectly followed, and the MPs on the committee pointed out that nowhere in the guidance did it state this. Those are sort of some examples of his flimsy kind of excuses. And I think from the committees, from the MPs on the committee, from what we heard from their pretty hard line questioning, it suggests that they are going to sanction or recommend a sanction against Boris Johnson. And the key question now is whether they recommend a sanction that suspends him from the House for more or less than 10 days. Why is that important? Because if you get a suspension of more than 10 days, it triggers a by-election in your constituency, and Boris Johnson would be able to stand in that by-election, but it would be hugely, hugely damaging to his political career.
Suella Braverman and her highly controversial Rwanda policy. What is the latest on this?
Yeah, well, I was one of the few journalists invited along to the trip at the weekend to accompany her in Rwanda, where there wasn't any sort of major announcement about the policy, the very controversial policy to send migrants who enter the UK illegally to the African country 4,000 miles away on a one-way flight. The policy is still stuck in the courts. It's Court of Appeal will decide next month. Then it will probably go to the Supreme Court. So it could be several months till the policy is operational. But Braverman wanted to basically reaffirm the government's commitment because she hadn't been over there as Home Secretary. It was the former Home Secretary, Priti Patel, that had announced it last April. So she wanted to reaffirm a commitment to it with the Rwandan government. But also the trip was really sort of designed to sort of showcase that, in her view, that the very positive opportunities that are on offer for migrants who are deported to Rwanda in terms of they'll be put up in adequate housing. They'll be offered opportunities to work there, and unlike in the UK, and they will be offered education. And basically, she said, a prosperous life in Rwanda. So we were sort of shown around the different projects and the different sort of education centres that they would be on offer. And as you know, Rwanda is a country that recently has taken in a huge number of refugees, 127,000 currently in the country. Obviously, most of those are from the region, from the Congo and Burundi, and are only there sort of in theory temporarily, where these migrants are going to be relocated there permanently. But there are lots of questions over the policy still, which neither government can answer. Like, how many migrants can Rwanda really take, considering 45,000 migrants crossed the channel in small boats last year? A population of just 13 million, a very densely populated country, in a landlocked country in Central Africa, how many can they really take? And will that deliver the deterrent effect that the UK government is relying on to stop those crossings?
That said, how is it being received again as a policy, and is the party and the government staunch on it?
The government is certainly staunchly in favour of the policy, largely because they are hugely dependent on the Rwanda policy working, because the illegal migration bill, which is coming back to the Commons next week, it will allow for the immediate detention of every single illegal migrant who comes to the UK. They will be barred permanently from ever claiming asylum, and they will be removed. The Home Secretary will be have a duty to remove them to back to their home country or to a third safe country. And the only third country that Britain has an agreement with is Rwanda. So it is dependent on being able to send at least hundreds of migrants there to show that the policy of if you come here illegally, you will be removed, it works. And so that's why they are very committed to it. However, the policy is hugely divisive with the public. The public view that the government must do something to stop the crossings, but they are not in favour of the legal migration bill, according to the polls. They suggest that it goes too far, and Rwanda is split down the middle. Basically, the Tories are banking on the fact that the policy will be put into practice before the election, probably next year, to show the voters that they have a plan that is trying to solve the channel migration crisis.
The Met Police review, how many have there been, and what is the latest, please?
Well, this is the review by Baroness Casey, Dame Louise Casey, who is renowned for being not holding back in her findings of institutional wrongdoings. And so this was published on Tuesday. It was a really shocking report. She found institutional racism in the Metropolitan Police, Britain's largest police force, which covers London, Greater London. Institutional racism, sexism and homophobia is common throughout the force. Some really horrifying examples of that, about women being traded between units across the force, like cattle, whether the superiors fancied them or not, that they heard how racism was played out in terms of a Sikh man, a Sikh police officer, who was forced to chop off his beard. There was various other examples. There was a gay police officer who said he would have to cross the street if he saw one of his colleagues coming along, because they would regularly sort of take the mickey out of him, and the banter, as they saw it, sort of went too far. But then there was institutional racism in terms of the large proportion of black people who are stop and searched. He went deep, so very, very deep into just how far the Metropolitan Police has sunk, really, as a force that isn't trusted with the public. And cannot sort of weed out and dismiss those bad apples that are throughout the whole force. So it was a very damning verdict, and it just shows you the lack of the trust in police at the moment in the UK is at rock bottom, and the report basically lays bare just how many years it's going to take to recover that.
Now, taxes. Everyone's talking about them, given the state of economies and budgets and inflation. And what is your Prime Minister saying about taxes?
Yes.
It's his own, I see.
Yeah, well, rather dubiously, he decided that he would fulfil his commitment of publishing his tax return on the afternoon when Westminster was fixated on two big stories: one, Boris Johnson's appearance in front of the committee about whether he lied on Partygate, and secondly, the key Brexit vote on the Windsor framework in Northern Ireland. So he decided that this was the day that he would bury bad news. It reveals that he earned more than £4.7 million from income and a US-based investment fund over the last 3 years, and has paid more than £1 million in UK tax. Why is this important? Not necessarily the details, but it just shows you how much money the Prime Minister is earning, and it questions whether he can really be in touch and understand the everyday concerns of the voters that he is trying to win over at the next election.
Thank you very much, Matt Dathan, our UK correspondent today.